Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Friday, March 21st. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Greer.
And I'm Ken Kaplan.
For all those who celebrate, tomorrow, April 22nd, is not only Earth Day, but also National Beagle Day. And in my household, we will celebrate. Big Henry has joined legacy dogs Lucer and Chester to round out our beagle pack. Actually, we've had Henry for a while, but at first we didn't think he'd stay. Longtime readers know my wife works with a rescue group and we foster a lot of beagles. They come and then they get adopted by somebody else. That's the way it's supposed to work. It didn't with Henry. Nobody wanted him. They came to see him, and he wasn't little and merry. He was big and clumsy. He looked like a Labrador in a beagle suit. Potential beagle adopters were envisioning something else. Labrador people were hesitant, too. He was big, but had no interest in chasing balls. And boy, can he howl. What he was sweet. He would wait until Chester and Lucy had all the people time they wanted. Then Henry would crawl onto the sofa at the end of the day and lay his head in somebody's lap. Finally, somebody indicated interest. My wife and I tossed and turned all night. Next day, my mother-in-law was aghast. "Why, he's part of your family now," she said. We kept him, obviously. In the business, they call that a foster fail. Chester and Lucy were foster fails, too. So happy Beagle Day to all, and especially to Henry. He shows that whatever American Kennel Club rules may say, dog breeds aren't defined by looks. They're defined in the heart. Now, today's stories. Our first story. What does it mean to have endured clear and concrete harms? In recent decades, the Supreme Court had narrowed the definition of who had standing to bring a case. Then came this term.
For the first time since it struck down Roe v. Wade last June, the Supreme Court is wrestling with abortion rights. The litigation over a widely prescribed pill has raised a host of questions beyond just abortion. One central question is whether the justices should be considering the case at all. That question concerns the legal doctrine known as standing. The doctrine limits the jurisdiction of federal courts, per the United States Constitution, to certain cases and controversies. When a case is brought to a federal judge, standing is the first thing they have to determine. The case has extinguished the hope the court expressed that an overturning Roe, a ruling that damaged its credibility with half the country, abortion questions would be left to the states. The case seeks to ban the use of mifepristone even in states where abortion is legal. And it's testing the High Court's commitment to one of the judiciary's core tenets. Where does its jurisdiction end? The whole thing is just everyone trying to use the courts to advance their particular view of what the right policy should be in this area, says Jonathan Adler, professor at Case Western Reserve University School of Law. And the courts are appearing to go along. This story was reported by Henry Gass in Washington for The Monitor.
In war, as in life, it's perhaps best to focus on what you hope to control. This is why Ukrainian troops preparing for an important spring offensive are choosing to shrug off the Pentagon leaks story.
The light infantry soldiers training on grounds ringed by forests say they are not deterred by the fact that Ukraine's much-anticipated spring offensive will be a critical inflection point in their war with Russia. Nor, they say, by the fact that roughly 70% of their ranks enter that fight with little combat experience. And neither, they add, are they deterred by leaked Pentagon assessments that the counteroffensive could fall well short of Kyiv's war aims. It doesn't matter if there is a leak. We will still have to liberate our country, says Colonel Yuri Bereza, commander of the Dnipro 1 battalion. It's still a job we have to do. So the leak doesn't influence me or my soldiers, he adds. We must win this war, saving as many of the lives of our soldiers as possible. The Pentagon's early February assessment warned that Ukraine's counteroffensive would likely achieve only modest territorial gains. Definitely, when you read this not-so-optimistic assessment, it is not good, says Mykola Bielyeskov at Ukraine's National Institute for Strategic Studies in Kyiv. But I think troops understand the stakes. They understand why this offensive is extremely important, that it's their territory, their people, and that we need to recover as much territory as possible. This story was reported by Scott Peterson in Dnipro region, Ukraine, for The Monitor.
Our congressional writer and climate writer both are outdoors women. That had them attuned to a bipartisan stirring on the need to protect natural resources based on love of place, despite politicians' differences on exactly how.
Can love for the outdoors transcend political partisanship? When Krista Case Bryant, The Monitor's congressional writer, caught wind of a broadening coalition bent on finally addressing climate change, she pulled in climate writer Stephanie Haynes to help explore that question by reporting a Monitor Weekly cover story. Very slowly, this evolved into a larger story than what I thought it would be, Krista says. She and Stephanie joined The Monitor's Why We Wrote This podcast to explain how their partnership evolved. 5-10 years ago, you were constantly writing this story where one side was talking about the dangers of climate change and the other side was basically saying that it didn't exist, Stephanie adds. And recently that has really shifted. At the heart of the evolution, a cross-section of power players who deeply value immersing themselves in nature and feel compelled to protect it. Differences remain over the best paths to solutions. And there was a question of, how do we frame that in a way that makes clear what the concerns are without coming across as condescending toward that position, says Krista. In both the climate realm and the political realm, there are all these phrases that might sound really straightforward, Stephanie adds, but that could mean something entirely different depending on the listener. There's just an awful lot of care taken, she says, in what we're writing and how. This story was reported by Clayton Collins and Jingnong Peng for The Monitor. You can listen to the full episode in today's issue and find new episodes as they appear on csmonitor.com/why-we-wrote-this.
For our commentary writer, the shooting of Black teenager Ralph Jarl as he knocked on a residential door raises questions of how to overcome fear and racism with humanity and love.
There's a picture of Ralph Jarl that continues to make the rounds throughout various forms of media. It's an image of Ralph, with his box haircut and stoic smile, posing with a bass clarinet almost as radiant as the youth's brown skin. What stands out to me is that this picture serves as public relations, although the photo wasn't taken with that in mind. Its purpose now is to affirm Ralph's humanity. The reality that such an affirmation is needed is the entirety of the problem. The Kansas City, Missouri teen is now recovering from gunshot wounds sustained because he knocked on the wrong door to pick up his siblings. I have often wondered the age at which society sees Black males as threats, a designation which serves as a cruel and sometimes deadly rite of passage. Even Black preschoolers are not exempt from overzealous and punitive measures. The moment this week when students walked out of Staley High School in Kansas City for their friend, their brother, their classmate will endure for their entire lives. This might be the start of the best lesson they will ever engage in, that to know your neighbor is to love your neighbor, and any violation of that sacred bond means we all must respond. This story was reported by Ken Macon for The Monitor.
Can a soccer team in Wales boost the morale and prospects not only of fans, but of a whole city, too? At a time when people are hungering for community, Wrexham offers hope not only for sports fans, but also for anyone looking for connection.
Wrexham has long been the bad news bears of soccer. It wasn't always so. During the 1970s, it was the pride of this rural working-class town. But when Wrexham's economy waned, so did the team. In 2011, over 2,000 faithful fans formed the Wrexham Supporters Trust and bought the struggling team in a crowdfunding effort. In 2021, actors Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney were inspired by that devotion and bought the team. Call it an act of business philanthropy. Sports can play a fundamental role in sustaining social connections. We said from the very beginning that we wanted to be drawn into Wrexham's story and not the other way around, Mr. McElhenney says. And that means that we should and want to be a part of the community. That's something that's really important to us. At press time, Wrexham is one victory away from winning the National League. Mark Taylor and his son stuck with the football club during its lean years. Mr. Taylor recalls that when he first bought a season ticket, he didn't know the people around him. These days, when he makes his way to his seat up in the stands, he's greeted by name. It's just like one big family, he says. They're hugging, shaking hands, and they love my 8-year-old son. The story was reported by Stephen Humphreys in Wrexham, Wales for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on reefs and rangelands of renewal. Researchers announced this week their discovery of a thriving deep water coral reef stretching for miles across the ridge of a previously unmapped volcano. Located within the Galapagos Marine Reserve, the find is equal parts marvel and motivation. The reef provides a vast and dazzling new view into nature's capacity for balance and resuscitation at a time when changing ocean conditions are stressing the world's shallower coral ecosystems. Similar lessons are flowering on land as well. A record series of storms this winter has virtually erased years of acute drought in California and germinated in a confetti of wildflowers across the state's desert southlands, so lush and vibrant that even satellites have taken note. The abundance is always there, said Evan Meyer, director of the Theodore Payne Foundation, and each superbloom is seeding the future. The urgencies of climate change produce a steady flow of now-or-never warnings about the welfare of humanity and the planet. And yet other narratives quietly persist, the resilience of nature. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. For more Monitor audio, including our serial podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. Thanks for joining us. Come back Monday when we share insights on House Speaker Kevin McCarthy from his hometown of Bakersfield, California. In honor of Earth Day, today's Christian Science spiritual perspective shows how, when it looks as though the beauty and resources of the earth are waning, we can turn to a God's eye view of creation, spiritual and complete. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Alessandro Clemente.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2023.